Russian attack. Up for a little guerrilla warfare?
Very, very well done.
I mean, it's Thursday.
Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Joe.
All right, full house today, guys. We're talking about Rush and Attack.
Russian Attack.
Russian. Yeah, it can get tricky. You know, I don't want to go. Let's just call
it spelling. Spell
RNA.
It out for it.
RNA.
RNA. No. It's Russian Attack.
All right, it's Russian Attack. It's developed and published by Konami, who... We haven't been too hot on them.
No.
But, you know, we'll give them a chance, right?
Yeah.
We'll give them a chance. This was in the arcade first, 1985. It was in the arcade. And then it came to the NES in what is now, in our timeline, April 1987.
Happy April, everybody.
Hey.
Yeah. You know what they say about April showers?
Bring May flowers?
May showers.
May showers.
Yeah, it always rains. especially in Siberia.
This does take place in Siberia.
It takes place in Siberia.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, there are no good Siberian jokes.
So it's like a Russian... Okay. No.
No.
So literally it's a...
Just...
And that brings us to the essential...
Okay, so let's just talk about it real fast. I want first impressions from everybody. So, Sean, what are your first impressions on Russian Attack?
My first impressions are as follows. Little tidbits. Wow, this guy can take an entire army with a knife for the most part. Two, this is another game that feels just like Kung Fu.
Hold on a minute. I don't want to gloss over that for a second, okay? That's a real problem with this game. He goes in with a pocket knife. He's like, screw this. I'm going to take down the whole... Like, you know, this is worse than Commando. In Commando, you came armed at least, and you said, I'm going to go from the back.
This time, he has to scavenge his equipment. He can only take Russian weapons. Or, I'm sorry, unnamed enemies' weapons.
Thank you.
Who happened to be in Siberia.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, Siberia is only mentioned in the arcade version. I don't think it's mentioned in the NES version.
Okay.
And three, it's actually got some pretty good like background art. And it's, for the most part, non-repeating. So I dig that.
Sam?
Those were kind of similar to my thoughts. It was, one, background art is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, two, this kind of feels like a lot of the side-scrolling action platformer games that we've seen. You know, this reminds me of Trojan, because we played that one pretty recently. It's like, oh, it's another guy with another knife thing, and when guys come at you, they can't touch you, but they're going to come at you from both sides of the screen, and the AI is, like, kind of bad. Like, you can climb on top of stuff, and they won't follow you. Some enemies will follow you if they're... a little bit smarter, but for the most part, guys will run past you. But if they followed you, that'd just be a pain, because then there'd just be even more enemies. Anyway, it seems like a first impression is like, oh, it's one of those games where there's like a ton of people that are following you as you're trying to move right across the screen.
Yeah, where they're coming from is who knows.
Yeah, and then there are like, first immediately going into, like, all right, so I guess that there's going to be like upgrades and stuff like that. But mostly just try and survive until the end is the point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joe?
Can I first give my initial impression of Sean's initial impression?
Yeah.
Which is, I didn't know that this guy had a knife, even.
I thought he
had a police baton for some reason. So when you said your initial impression, that was like a new initial impression for me. My initial impression of the game was not very positive. I guess now looking back, it did have nice art, but I didn't really care for the gameplay. I felt like there's just the first level felt like kind of easy. You just like spam that attack button. And things are just coming at you. I don't know. I just
tackle it very slowly. I'll tell you right now, this is embarrassing, but I have to say it because it was my first impression. You know, I knew the play on words and everything like that, and I don't actually think that this was the setting. But when I looked at my character, Did anybody else think that he looks like he's from, like, colonial times?
Yeah, okay,
all right. Like, the Revolutionary War?
So, not my character. Your character with the color palette that you have looks like a police officer.
Maybe that's where the police battalion came from.
At least in the first level, the color palette and the enemy design just looks like they're redcoats.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It looked like I was like Patriot and they were the redcoats.
However, sometimes they know Taekwondo.
Yeah. I mean, you said that.
And then there's also like a giant missile that you walked past at one point.
Yeah, this is alternate history fiction. But you said that you don't think it's like an obvious Russia equivalent?
No, I was saying I don't think that it takes place during the Revolutionary War. I just said that it was weird that they were like, you know, because remember how like in Trojan, it was post-apocalyptic future. So imagine this was like post-apocalyptic future where like the Revolutionary War never ended, but civilization has.
And it just globalized to the fact that the American Revolution is now being fought in Siberia.
Yeah. I just want to talk about some differences between the arcade version and the NES version before we go any deeper into the game. And it starts with the plot. Okay? Yeah. The plot for the arcade version is that the player takes on the role of a United States Special Op soldier. You infiltrate an enemy military base in order to save multiple prisoners of war from being executed by firing squads.
Yeah. Okay? Wow. Like, and then they show them actually struggling and tied to poles.
Yeah. Wow. So it's pretty graphic. And I think Nintendo had like a Family Seal quality thing that they were going for. So it was changed to, in the NES version, you're no longer rescuing prisoners. Instead, the whole idea is that you have to destroy a secret weapon being developed in the enemy's headquarters, which wound up being the
it's an ICBM,
the missile.
But that, like, it's very strange that, like, it actually changes, like, the timeline that these games take place in the arcade version. Is it like the Cold War? I mean, this is 1987. Mm-hmm. The Cold War is still in full swing. You're actually, or 1985 when it was published originally.
Yeah.
This is actually a hot war now where there are American POWs in Russia and you have to go and get them.
Right.
And in the NES version, it's just like, okay, you could be like stealthily, with air quotes, trying to destroy one of their weapons. But yeah, this is a really dark game with the implications.
Yeah. And the arcade version added some other, the NES version added some other cool things. It added a 2-player cooperative mode for the NES one, and it also added 2 additional levels, so that was like a nice touch. I think it's the airport and being actually on the base, and it also introduced an invincibility with the star, which is like a total Super Mario Brothers ripoff thing, but at least they didn't play the music during that.
Yeah.
And they added a pistol with unlimited ammo, but it only
for a small amount of time.
Yeah, it's like a limited time thing. However, the arcade version
hella cool flamethrower that would make your enemies pop in and out into like a skeleton silhouette. It was really cool.
So what do you think happened? Do you think the flamethrower was just too op?
I think it was too op and a little too graphic. Skeletons.
I mean, it sounds like a cool effect. But it sounds more like electricity than fire to me.
Oh,
like,
no, man.
Well, it's because you burn
them. No, I'm just saying the effect of...
Well, you burn all their flesh off,
but then
and so then
on.
It just bones. Well, you know, but that's how it works.
I mean, but who needs any of that stuff anyway when you have a knife?
That's right. A knife is the star of this game.
Yep. You know, there's 6 stages that you have to get through, and they're all linear. You just one section to the other. Not much platforming going on. Good background art, though, of, like, tanks, and I really liked the harbor.
Yeah,
because it, like, at first you're not sure where you are. You might just be on another part of the base, and then all of a sudden, like, reveals like the bridge and the water and stuff like that.
Is that the fourth round?
That was the third round. Yeah, the fourth round is the air base.
I feel like I just like missed the art completely because I played the third round. And, like, I don't remember it standing out to me.
Luckily for you, on Game FAQ, there are actually someone like basically stitched together the entire maps of each level, but without any enemies on them Cool. So, yeah, that's like a cool, like, and you could actually, if you wanted to, I guess, like, just put all six of them together, too, for yourself to see, like, the whole map. But it doesn't work perfectly like that.
I did find that on the third round, though, I was going over and around people the most. I was like, I don't even feel like fighting these people anymore because it's just annoying to fight these guys.
And that's one of the things is, like, you can cheese this game and like, you know, wait for the enemies to come to you, stab on both sides, and then keep walking.
I think that's the way to play it, honestly.
Oh, come
I don't even mean that. I mean, like, enemies on this level, I run up to the top level, jump down when I see someone coming there, like trying to, like, it's easier to rush than to attack.
But that's not fun. I'm not having a good time doing that.
No, but you just die so easily.
Yeah, and I also want to break something to you. For me, I didn't have fun the other way either. not to keep everyone on the edge of their seat for my essential games.
I will agree. I like the goofball Cold War setting. I like the art, but this is not a fun game at all.
No.
Right. Even like the boss in the first level and the boss in the third level.
The boss in the first level was just a bunch of people.
It was just a bunch of guys. Yeah.
And I just sat there spamming the attack button. And that was it. Like, no one could touch me.
Yeah,
the third level is the same thing. It was just with, you had to lay down and just make sure you pay attention to which side they come from.
But it's very easy. Even the second level, Joe, that's with the dogs, right?
Like, no, I think the second level was with the jetpack guys and the grenades.
Oh, okay.
Which was the third level.
Okay, yeah.
The third level has the dogs. Just it's like, lay down. What the heck is that? A pack of dogs? Like
coming from both directions?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's ridiculous.
Siberian huskies.
It's ridiculous that is like, that's the boss of this game. Is like, at the end of the level, just throw them a bunch of enemies. Yeah. Like, what? You know, I think at least the airbase did it right, where it's like there's helicopters dropping bombs, but then it's just ridiculous. At that point, the bombs that they're throwing and stuff like that's like you're...
And that's level 4?
Yeah, worse than the volcano, Joe, in Gradius, you know? No. Because here's why, okay? The volcano in Gradius is spamming stuff, but at least there's like a safe spot kind of thing. The helicopters aren't your objective. You have to kill people. So you're constantly moving around the stage while also trying to dodge these bombs.
You're not trying to kill the helicopters? I mean, there are people in the helicopters.
To be honest, I didn't get past that level, so maybe that's why. But I was killing the people on the ground level.
Oh, those are just civilians.
Whoops. The helicopters kept tripping me up because they just keep throwing grenades, and I did not, you know, when one hit KOs, that's it. That's about it for me. not like that's not like all I have to say. I do have a little bit more to say about the game. Did anybody find it weird in the very first level? There's those landmines. You're so athletic that if there's two of them next to each other, you might accidentally jump over the first one, but perfectly land in the second one.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've done that a few times.
Make it this way. You time your jumps so that you'll land in the middle and then land in the middle again.
I thought the jumps The jumps were too floaty to have that kind of obstacle.
Go
ahead.
No, I was going to say, there was a cool moment in the second level where they have the landmines out again, and then there's some of those flying sidekick guys coming at you.
Those are the worst.
But if you time
you thought that was cool, though, for real?
No. Okay. If you time it exactly right, because you can get those guys midair. So you jump, stab, land right in between them, and you kind of like, if you can, there's a way to do it that I did anyway, that you can... like, quickly jump and stab and jump and stab and jump and stab over the landmines while killing those guys in this, like, little locked-in rhythm. And it felt pretty cool. That was probably the coolest thing I did in that game.
That's pretty impressive. I was very slack-jawed while you were explaining that. Like, that sounds like a lot of, like,
that
skill.
Or at the end of the first level where there's just, like, four of those guys coming at you at a time, and you jump, and if you just mash the attack button enough... then you can get them all in one jump. And that felt pretty cool too.
Yeah, I guess we'll take our moments of joy when we can get them in this game.
did everyone else notice that when the flying sidekick guys would jump at you, the hitbox is really weird?
Like, sucks.
When you hit them?
Yes. Yeah. But they hit you like regardless. Yeah. And that's just like, that's just a major problem with the game in general is that like, there's not enough things happening here in the NES version to differentiate the gameplay enough. Like this game could have used either more weapons or more platforming, one or the other, but like as it stands, like dying in this and starting from the beginning of the level again, or like running out and having to start from the very beginning, it's just like, it's not like enough, like, okay, this time we're going to do it, we're going to do it differently. Right. It's like, well, maybe this time, you know, I'll hit his hitbox.
It doesn't feel like you have precise enough control, even over like when there's like some guns that shoot bullets at you. And I feel like you can dodge those, but like once you're kind of in the air, it's out of your hands. Like,
well, one thing that I've been noticing just throughout the family tree of these side-scrolling beat 'em up, I guess is
that's what it is right now.
In the family tree of the NES games, I keep bringing up Kung Fu, and we had Trojan, and then this one, I'm noticing like a troubling pattern of just. This seems to be what they think the formula is right now, of just sort of like a random assortment. I know it's not random because it's the same pattern, at least in Russian Attack, and that's how people memorize these levels and beat these games, of just a bunch of different kinds of mooks that have one attack that just sort of throw them at you in a particular order, and that's a level.
Yeah, but there was game design.
The game needs to offer something different than just a different setting in pixel art.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? That's the problem I have here, is that, you know, dare I say, like, yes, the game's a little more, like, refined than Kung Fu, but I think Kung Fu might have even been a little more fun.
Kung Fu had a lot more you could do.
That's what I'm saying.
What do you mean by refined?
Refined in the sense of, like, Kung Fu was, it's an ugly-looking game, and it's also just, like, you know, that jump is very
worse. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I guess maybe I don't think this jump is work. I just think you need this jump more.
Gotcha.
In this game. Yeah. So it feels worse.
Right. You only have to jump over like little pots and snakes.
All I'm saying is I hope that there is at least some step forward in the design of this kind of games before we're out of 1987, or I'm going to lose my mind.
Right. Because, we're going to see. This is a very easy to make game.
Yeah.
If you know how to make games, it's a very easy to make game. And it kind of has like the Super Mario Brothers effect going for it, where it's like, you know, oh, it looks like it plays like Super Mario Brothers, even though it's nothing like Super Mario.
A little bit, I guess.
No, well, I guess what what I'm talking about. Side-scrolling. You go from point A to point B, and you're trying to move. Yeah, exactly. But it's like, I'm not saying it's in that realm. I'm saying, like, for people who are trying to bank off the success of this massively popular game, this is an easy way to, like, you know, make a copycat.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm certainly already feeling fatigued, and we're only on
Game 3.
Yeah, Game 3 of our iteration. I wouldn't count Ghosts and Goblins, I guess.
No, that's got a little bit more to it.
Yes. All right, so the final boss in the game is a missile itself. hasn't been launched yet, thankfully, so it's not coming right at you. But you have to shoot it 12 times while, you know, dealing with all of the enemies on the screen and stuff, too.
But the missile doesn't fight you.
Yeah, but the missile doesn't fight back. And then, basically, like, it shows, like, I guess, like, a destroyed base. And then you running out of it. But isn't that implying that, like, the missile blew up by you shooting it 12 times? But you were so close to it. Not even shooting. You can use the knife 12 times. You could just stab it 12 times.
It's a trick of perspective.
It's implying that you started the explosion, and here you are just, like, rescuing, you know, you're not looking back, you're doing the explosion, you're already following all the 80s movie cues, and then it says, you have saved the world. Congratulations. Peace has arrived at last. And it's like, peace for who?
Yeah, peace for,
I'm starting to think this is American propaganda, the game.
Yeah. I will offer, this is a totally straight thought, but a funny insight. I saw on a YouTube page, one of the commenters said that when they grew up playing this game and they're Russian, they always thought that you were playing as a Russian.
They didn't see
Russian attack, and it's like, what?
Oh,
like,
man.
You didn't think, like, at all? It's, like, funny to think now that this whole time they thought they were playing as the good guys, and then they realized they've actually been killing themselves as the enemy. that's my thoughts on Russian attack. I will offer this as a solution that the Famicom version saw, but the NES version didn't ever get the treatment for. In the Famicom version, there's a few differences, okay? It allows the player to continue up to 3 times after a game over.
Oh.
So you don't have to start the whole game over again. You die, you get to your last life, and it asks you if you'd like to continue, and then you start at the beginning of that level.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, they just didn't, you just don't go back to a checkpoint.
Yeah, okay. And if the player loses a life in the Famicom version, his character will respawn at the very spot where he died in the last part.
Wow.
Instead of being sent to the checkpoint
sounds
in the
like
NES
that's a
version.
Much easier game.
Definitely sounds like an easier game, but I don't, honestly, in a game that's this boring, I don't mind those adjustments. Kind of wish that the NES version got them.
Yeah.
Because think about it, if you're actually trying to get through this game and beat it, might as well get a couple of things to help you rather than like be like, yeah, I'm going to go through this whole thing again.
But like with the amount of time that I put into this game, which was not that much, I mean, I was still making progress. If I had those extra continues, I don't know how long it would take me to beat this game and feel gypped out of money.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right.
Did anyone play two-player?
No.
Did
no.
you?
I played it alone. How sad is that?
What?
No, I just wanted to see if, I just wanted to see, like, if it was an alternating thing, or if you play together, and if you share lives,
right.
But I didn't have that. It was like last night at 11 o'clock.
But it's
so
co-op.
I just played by myself. It's co-op, yeah, and you don't share lives. And it was actually at very first, I was like, oh, this might be helpful because I can just let that guy be like death fodder while I kill other people, and then he becomes when he respawns. He's invincible for a second and usually kills one or two enemies by like
what
just by
you,
them running into them.
Who were you playing?
No
one. Was he killing anybody?
When he dies, he respawns and he's got that like few seconds of invincibility after respawning, and enemies would just run into him and die from touching him.
What? That's a thing?
Yeah. But it doesn't really help eventually because you can't move past him. So you have to wait until he dies and then like run before it respawns.
You have made up a new way of playing all these kinds of games. I don't know.
That's awesome.
I was just testing it to see what kind of thing it was, and I just happened upon that.
The game personally for me just wasn't, there wasn't enough content in there for me to be like, oh, well, maybe this game will be completely different. And I was like, nah, I'm kind of convinced of what it is. I mean, it's cool that they offered that mode back in the day because to Joe's point, it's a good thing to test because most of the games that were two-player are really just, player one goes and then player two goes.
Right.
And if it's like your older brother, he just goes forever. And
yeah.
You're like, when's my turn? And then you die immediately and then it goes back to your older brother's turn.
And I'm usually a pretty big like advocate of like, oh, this game's probably better with two-player, but I don't think this game's that much better with two-player.
No.
I mean, I haven't played it with two players, but I don't think it would be. Like,
is there like friendly fire, do you know? Like if you have like a bazooka and you fire
it
at your guy. Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say no.
So Russian Attack did get a sequel for the 360 and the PS3. It's
World Russian Attack.
Russian Attack Expatriate.
Expatriate.
Is the name of the game. And I think Konami did this with, well, a lot of companies in general just did this during like that Xbox Arcade era.
Yeah.
Where they were just like, hey, let's get the NES game and just do it with new graphics and stuff like that. But I don't think it didn't have like anything really going for it.
Was it like 3D side scrolling?
No, 3D side scrolling, exactly. They didn't like deviate from the formula so much. I'm trying to find out if I can get like a plot synopsis.
Yeah, I want to know why he's an expatriate.
Yeah, here we
Turns
go.
Turns out they had two missiles.
Okay, so it takes place 15 years after the Cold War struggle between Russia and the United States. And during a flashback, the player watches as the CIA learns that the Russians have discovered a previously unknown material called Ulysium that could be used to create the world's most powerful nuclear missiles. And then some stuff happens. 15 years later, something new happens with Wolf Spider and Operation Angel Tear and Rory Gibson of the Harvest Team has abandoned Russia during the extraction.
Expatriate.
Yeah, so he's the expatriate of the Russians now working for the CIA.
All right, well, that was completely obnoxious.
Yeah, and I'll show you guys a little photo of what the game looks like.
Oh, that's such a great photo.
Yeah, it pretty much sums up everything
you
need to know. He is still using... He's still using the knife, which is incredible. But it makes you wonder if the guy in Russian Attack was also an expatriate.
No, he was an American Cobra Commander.
He's a regular, regular patriot.
Yep. Proud to be an American. let's get into the essential games list.
Why am I taking out my notes? Like I have to look at something to decide on whether this is essential or not.
Yeah, obviously it's essential.
All right, it's time for the essential games list. Sam's already laughing. Sam, why don't you take us through, explain what this is first, briefly.
All right, so,
and then vote.
So the essential games list is our list of games from the NES, where we decide if these games are worth playing today.
Whoa.
In 2018, or whenever this comes out.
Yeah, 2019, yeah, 2020, who cares?
Yeah.
We reserve the right, by the way, to say that the game doesn't hold up in 2018, but does in 2019. Yeah.
Like, oh, wait.
If all of a sudden people...
After the Great War.
Yeah, if after the Great War, there's only CRTs left, and NESs get remanufactured because we no longer have access to, like, you know, advanced chips.
Because they're all being broken used out
in the Harvest Team's nuclear missile program.
Anyway.
Yeah, so that's what the essential
that's what the essential game is basically all about. So, Sam, how you voting?
Yeah, oh, how am I voting?
Just for the record, you need two votes to be essential.
We didn't get an example of, like, you could be playing this, do you want to be playing that? You know,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I missed that.
Okay, let me try and do a little thing.
Yeah, give me, like, you know.
All right, you could be playing Call of Duty.
Black Ops 3.
Black Ops.
Five, okay. Whatever.
Black Ops, Minecraft, Free
or
for All.
Or even Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater.
Microtransaction, the game.
Microtransactions.
Yeah, you could play the Tony Hawk Underground 2X on PSP.
Or you could be playing...
You could be playing Mock Rider, which is a much better game.
Or you could be playing Russian Attack.
Russian Attack.
So how you voting, Sam?
Oh, man. You know, this game, it just feels like Trojan. It feels like other games that had more in them. And it's not that fun to play. So that being said, it looks cool. And it's like cool that they have different weapons. But I feel like it's just like that's not really implemented well. I feel like the weapons are an afterthought. I feel like, it's just like there are other games that are like this game, and this is not the best one of those, and even those are not essential, so this is not essential.
All right, get it out of here. Joe.
Russian Attack is not on my essential games list.
Great. Wow, that was lovely. I think Sean did something similar in a previous episode.
Should I add more? I don't want to step on Sean's toes.
No.
I think Russian Attack is not on my essential games list because it is particularly just not a very fun game.
Yeah, it's not fun. I'm amazed that it got a Xbox 360
sequel,
which added all of these weird contrivances. Yeah, it's not on the essential games list, guys.
Here's the troubling thing. Last time we dealt with Konami, whatever you want to call them.
Stop saying Konami.
Konami. Last time we dealt with
Konami.
It was December of 1986, and it was Gradius, which wound up being our game of the year, okay?
Yeah.
Now we're playing this.
What? Make that connection.
You know what I'm saying? That's don't even think of them. They almost like... This is the thing that's troubling about, like, these third-party game companies. Because even we were talking about we like Rare, but then we saw, like, what was coming up, and we were like, oh, but those games aren't good. Like, you know? It's just weird how things go back then. And I would have felt really gypped to have loved Gradius and then get this game. No, I'm not. No buts. Okay? Look, that's it. I would have felt gypped because the reason why is this game isn't complete to me. Doing the same thing at the end of every level in terms of like just hit a bunch of enemies and stuff like that,
and then jump over a fence.
Yeah, and also like you know just the way that like you control your character and even like little things like going up ladders was difficult sometimes. Like you know waiting on screen for people to just get close to you this way you could stab them in the chest. It's aren't they smarter than that? Like
they one attack, do they?
They don't
the
really,
guys. They just walk into you.
You get one hit. They can only hit you one time. That's so annoying. Like, even things, Kung Fu, they can hit you more than once.
Yeah, you know? And in Kung Fu, you can get hugged to death. Yeah. That's intense.
That's cool.
Not in this game, and therefore not essential. And that's all the time we have, right?
I think that's it.
Any other thoughts?
No.
Good. That's all the time we have for this episode of Nestalgia. Join us next time for Track and Field. And be sure to play it yourself if you have a power pad.
Yeah, if you can do that.
You're going to need a power pad for that one. I mean, listen, you're not going to need it. You can just hit the A and the B buttons with your fingers, but that's not using your feet.
I don't. To borrow ours. Maybe reach out.
Maybe reach out. You know, I'm not going to give it to you, but it would be nice to know that you might be interested in using it. I love it when people reach out to us at contact@nestalgiacast.com. That's how you email us, and we'll get back to you right away. We've responded to almost everybody who's contacted
us.
Except for Steven.
Steven, sorry about that, but the question just, it really didn't make any sense. I couldn't decipher what he was saying. I was like, okay, yeah.
I'll definitely show you the cat that I once had.
Right. So I was like, all right, that's cool. But we do respond to most people. And it's called contact@nestalgiacast.com is the email, because nestalgiacast.com is our website. On the website.
We do have a website.
Yeah, on the website's crazy stuff. There's articles, there's episodes, there's
art.
Show notes. Speaking of art.
We have a logo.
Yeah, we have a logo, and we also have a Twitter account where we post art all the time. And not fan art that we then steal and post under our own name, and not things where we crop out watermarks. We're legit. And we post the actual content, and we explain it, and we only hashtag it with the same hashtags over and over and over again. So it's not like it's hashtagged to hell with
hashtag
40 hashtags.
Insta love, hashtag blessed.
Speaking of blessed.
I just searched the blessed hashtag just to see what comes up, you know? That's why it's important to add it at the end of your posts.
Speaking of blessed, I feel blessed when people subscribe to NestalgiaCast, or just Nestalgia.
You know what? I do look at Mike sometimes, and he just seems enraptured by joy, and I ask him, Mike, why are you so happy right now? He's like, somebody just subscribed.
Me feel good, and we love subscribers. We love you guys for listening, even if this is your first time listening.
We still love you.
Yeah, come back or don't. That's weird, right? See how it's crazy? I can say stuff like that because we are not living paycheck to paycheck by this podcast. We don't depend on it. So we're just doing this for fun, and we hope you come back for fun. Who knows?
All you gamer boys and gamer girls, come on. Like, let's check out the haunts.
Check out those haunts. It's almost Halloween, or it's probably Halloween. Who knows?
It's probably past Christmas.
We've been in this record.
We should figure out the exact day that these are coming out.
Yeah, probably pretty soon we should do that. But not for this one.
Next time on Nostalgia, we'll figure out the dates these are coming out.
Great. I'm Michael Esposito. You can find me on @EspositoFilm on Twitter, and I'll talk to you soon.